Hello, and welcome to Citizen 411, your information directory for democracy, where we want everyone represented and empowered in our democratic republic. Citizen 411 is powered by the League of Women Voters. We're nonpartisan and never promote candidates. We help people understand the issues so they can vote responsibly. I'm Tracy Riley Kelly.
I'm Teresa Torres.
And I'm Rachel Bancroft.
So our monthly civic happenings. Our theme this month is to celebrate writers, Northwest stories, creativity, and connection, and we have two local events for you to put on your calendar. One is the Clark College Writing Festival. It's a big event, and it's Saturday, May 9th, and a week-long event curated by the Creative Writing and English faculty. Celebrate writing, including workshops and readings by visiting writing professionals, faculty, students, and community members, writers and readers alike. It's free, and our guests will tell you more about it. So just look for the Clark College Writing Festival via the Google. Also free, June 27th for the KXRW Book Fair and Media Fest, also held at Clark College from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's family-friendly, welcoming setting. There will be a hands-on workshop in writing, cartooning, and storytelling, and all sorts of creative activities that support literacy and imagination. And many authors, book readings, and workshops. So save this date. The link is northwestbookfair.com.
Lastly, a quick note about KXRW. Our station is in the middle of its fun drive, running now through May 15th. This worthy little powerhouse of independent radio operates on a shoestring. There are no big corporate donors here, just community support from listeners like you and people like us. KXRW shows up for our community by amplifying local voices, local issues, and local creativity. So even if you are thinking globally, please act locally. And if you are able, consider making a donation at kxrw.fm online. Every contribution truly makes a difference.
Jesse Morse and Jen Denrow are co-directors of the Clark College Spring Writing Workshop, which is part of the week-long Clark College Creative Writing Festival. And all of these events are free. Jesse's taught literature and writing at Clark College since the fall of 2018. He has a PhD in English and creative writing from the University of Denver. He wrote Flash Floods Are Anomalies for Finishing Line Press, 2021. He plays guitar and sings in the rock band Night Paving. And most proudly, he is a devoted father to Wren, who just turned 12. Jen Denrow, who also teaches at Clark, works as a mental health counselor and writing teacher. She is the author of the book California, and in 2017 she founded 1122 Gallery, a backyard community art space that hosts artists in process for shows and conversation. Welcome, Jesse and Jennifer.
Thanks for having us.
Our first question is always a what do you do question. We are excited to talk about books and writing today. But first, what is it that each of you do at Clark College?
Well, we both teach there. Yeah, so we teach writing classes, English classes. But, you know, you do lots of other things too, like work on committees and, I don't know, help students through the day at the joy of a community college. But yeah, mainly we teach. We're teachers.
Well, then, for each of you, and out of Clark College or in, what is your favorite class to teach? And what makes it a favorite? Like, just speaking about what is the joy of teaching?
I feel lucky there because there's a huge adjunct population at Clark. So not everyone gets to teach a variety of classes. A lot of our English teachers teach composition classes. But I'm lucky. I get to teach creative writing sometimes, and I get to teach literature, and I get to teach composition. So I really run the gamut. And I don't know if I have a favorite class, but last quarter I got to teach a Native American literature class, which was totally, totally awesome. And of course, creative writing's my first love. I think that's Jen's first love too. So anytime we get to actually teach creative writing as opposed to like essay writing necessarily, it's always a joy and a pleasure to see what the young kids are writing these days. Is that what you would say?
Yeah, I would say poetry is probably my favorite to teach. Yeah.
Well, we're here to talk about the Creative Writing Festival. So we know it's free. How did it begin? And what are some specific things that you'll be doing that week?
I'll talk about how it began, and then you can outline the festival. Does that sound good? Okay. So it's actually been kind of a renaissance of a rebirth that old Clark College professors started a while ago, where there was a festival like this every spring, but a kind of a smaller version of it. And so, this is our fifth year doing it now, redoing it. And it's been amazing. It's grown each year. And it really just started because we had a lovely donation into the foundation that was primarily geared for the English department. So a way for the English department to promote itself in the community, but also to offer to the community and for opportunities for Clark faculty, because they lead, Clark faculty teach workshops, but also visiting writers come in and teach workshops, some very well-known, and then others, like, we always try to bring in really well-known writers, but also local writers, who might not be as well-known in the national scene. And so that's kind of how it started. We just applied. We were both adjuncts at that time, and it went up. Would anyone like to organize a festival in the spring? And we applied and got it. We're married, by the way. We should tell you that. I don't know if you guys knew that. So we applied together. Surprise. And we've been doing it now for 5 years, and we make a really good team. Chen is an amazing organizer of events, and I have some skill in that as well. So it just really mixed like two things that we love doing together. And I think it's just been a blessing. Yeah. It's just grown tremendously. So we're excited to see what the fifth year will be like. And what's happening this year, Jen?
So the festival that happens at Clark happens over the week, and mm-hmm. the writing workshop kicks off on Saturday, May 9th, and that opens up a week of writing affiliated activities at Clark. So the actual writing workshop that happens on Saturday, May 9th, is as Jesse was saying, it's a collection of writers that come in and they offer workshops, they give readings. There is free breakfast and lunch, and it runs from 10 a.m. 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So you can come have some coffee and a Danish in the morning. There's a morning reading, and then there are breakout workshops. So you can choose what workshop you want to go to. And we have a mix of poetry writers coming in and fiction writers and essayists or nonfiction writers. So it's a real great blend of different genres. And that's what will take place on May 9th. And then throughout the week at Clark, there are a lot of events. So Monday, May 11th, there is a nonfiction comics workshop hosted by Shay Merck. On Tuesday, May 12th, there's a reading and conversation with Emma Patti, who's also will be
there Saturday
at the workshop. She's a novelist and climate journalist. On Wednesday, May 13th, there's a release party for The Swift, which is the student-run literary journal, and that's at 11 a.m. on Wednesday. On Thursday, May 14th, there's another reading and conversation with Camille Dungy, and she's a poet and nonfiction author. And then Thursday, the English department will host the writing awards for students, and that happens at 3:30. So all of those events take place throughout the week. It's a real celebration of writing and of our student writers and our community.
Yeah.
So it's great.
So that sounds exciting. So if you've got writers, you need to have readers.
Yes.
So the three of us love to read. And so there's kind of this argument back and forth. Are people reading more these days for fun and enjoyment, or is it less given that we have so many distractions? Do you know? And how do we attract people to reading? Because I think it's a great pastime.
Yeah, it's a good question. In my classes, it's really interesting. I still strive, in these literature classes, especially, mm-hmm. I teach long novels. I ask these kids to read long novels because, I want them to have that experience. And I've felt really like they're doing it, So at least when they're, who knows? Maybe they're not, and I don't know. But I feel like when I'm asking for it in the classroom, I still am seeing reading. Like, I'm teaching another literature class this morning, and we're we just started Ana Castillo's So Far From God. Mm-hmm. It was this amazing novel from the 90s. And the discussion was palpable in class. You know, it was clear everyone, the 10, was a small class, but they had all been reading. So I do know that reading is still happening in the academic spaces. Mm-hmm. But yeah, outside of academic spaces, I don't know, that is a harder question. Does a thing like a Kindle encourage people to read, or does it not?
Right. You know. And audiobooks as well.
Yeah, audiobooks. People,
that counts as reading.
Okay, that's good. Because some students do listen to the audiobooks, mm-hmm, instead of read them. I say that's, mm-hmm, totally fine. You know, mm-hmm, I just want them engaging with the text. So, yeah, it's a good question. You know.
Yeah, I think the way that my students and I talk about this, and I think the way that our conversations usually go is that reading's still happening, but it's just, it looks different than it has in the past. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is like short form content. Scanning is a, mm-hmm, big part of the, yeah, process of reading. So I think the conversations generally kind of revolve around, like, you know, that sort of in-depth reading that that sustained kind of longer reading, mm-hmm, is less common now. And I think we just are changing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have too much time left in this segment, but I did want to discuss briefly genres, or the different styles or categories of books. I know many readers connect strongly to familiar labels like romance or science fiction or mysteries. Mm-hmm. What are some other genres or emerging genres that might be new or surprising to our listeners?
I would say, well, one of my favorite genres that I used to teach workshops in this all of the time, but it's lyric essays. So, mm-hmm, I don't know if that's a familiar genre, yeah, but I think that's more of these hybrid genres are, I think, arising. So like you have flash fiction, you have these kind of crossbreeds of a familiar or maybe even two familiar genres that kind of get together and create their own thing. And I think with film too, we talk about this a lot with film, but certainly in books. So lyric essays, I would say that was one of my favorites.
Hmm. Would that also be what would be considered a niche genre? Can you talk to us about that?
Huh.
Yeah, I thought about this a little bit coming in here. And I mean, I think niche genres, to me, my understanding, I'm not really well versed in them, but my understanding is something like, so if you were writing a fantasy book, but it's very specifically like vampires in outer space, right? So that's the
Amish
niche.
Vampires.
Amish vampires. There
I know
you
that
go.
Book.
So that's the niche genre, right? It's taking a larger genre and then making it very focused specifically on one type of thing that is often very like, you know, a subculture.
Yeah.
And so I'm completely not read in any real niche genres, except maybe sound poetry. I would like to encourage you all out there to Google Jaap Blonk, JaapBlonk, and watch some videos of his sound poetry. It's poetry, okay, with no words.
Really?
So there you go. Cool. There's a niche genre.
Poetry with no words.
Yeah. Now, imagine that.
Isn't that an extraordinary thing to think about? Well, it's time to take a quick break. We've been speaking today about writing with Jesse Morse and Jennifer Denro, writers and professors at Clark College. You are listening to Citizen 411, your information directory for democracy.
The Columbian continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project pays for reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including housing, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Welcome back to Citizen 411, and we're your hosts, Tracy Riley Kelly, Rachel Bancroft, and Teresa Torres. Today, we've been talking with Jesse Morse and Jennifer Denro about writing and the Clark College Creative Writing Festival. So, the three of us are members of the League of Women Voters, and we're really into civic engagement. So, how does learning to be a better writer help people to be more civically engaged?
Great question.
Thanks.
I think The way that I think about it, I think writing and thinking are so intimately connected. So when I think about someone becoming a stronger writer or more effective writer, I think about them having more understanding of their own thinking process or their own thought process. So for me, I think if you are able to kind of sort through, even at a metacognitive level, like of how you're thinking about things, it allows you to be, I feel like, more informed. I mean, there's also the piece that you had mentioned about communication, right? And the better you're able to communicate your message to someone, the more conversation that can happen. And I think the more conversation and dialogue that can happen, the more engaged you would be. So that's, I guess that's how I would think about it. I don't know if you want to add anything.
Yeah, I would just add, I mean, letters to your representatives and politicians still matter.
Yeah,
you know?
They do.
And I think of like letter from a Birmingham jail, you know, mm-hmm. by Martin Luther King, or so many examples historically of actual letters that were written that have now become things we study or even think of them as literature, you know. And it's, if you can't write, or if writing is, it's hard for you to communicate in writing, that is taken away from you,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. So. Okay, let's talk about book banning, something that we abhor, but what happens to society when we start banning books?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the worst things society can do, you know, is to try to limit the ideas that are mm-hmm. disseminated in society, and that's really what ends up happening, right? So I have I was thinking about this question last quarter, and this was a great student, actually, but I taught a book by Tommy Pico, who's a queer indigenous writer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's lots of sex in the book and there's lots of, like, anything goes in the book. And it was really hard for this student to read this book because it went against all their religious values, mm-hmm. basically. And they really wished they hadn't read the book and complained about it, you know. And I said, thank God books aren't banned here at Clark yeah. College, because that student, you know, if books were able to be banned, like, in that, you know, if you could ban any book, like mm-hmm. you end up with one homogenous idea throughout society, right. and that's very damaging and very dangerous.
And you can always just not read it if you don't like
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
And I've allowed that to my students. Yeah. Like, skip over this section if yeah. you want, you know, but yeah. you really need to like engage with this book, you know. Very rare that that's happened, but it has happened a couple times. And yeah, so book banning is, I don't know, it's right up there with some of the most criminal things a society can do to its people, I think.
I agree.
So we're now living in a time when tools like ChatGPT are widely available, and that clearly affects writing. What guidance do you give your students about using tools like this responsibly, especially without letting the technology replace their own voice and thinking?
Yeah, this is a big one, and it's our department. It's like, there's a constant conversation, an ongoing conversation. The way I handle it in my classroom, and I think department-wide, we're still trying to figure out kind of like a uniform approach, but the way I've handled it is to have conversations with my students and just ask them to be transparent about the ways in which they're using AI, what it gives them, what it relieves them of, the benefits, the disadvantages, what's being taken away. So we just had this conversation in my class this week, where students are thinking about the voice, in particular, about how when you stick a prompt into ChatGPT and you have it spit something back out, it lacks that humanity, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we look at a piece, we talk about, this is what an AI generated response looks like. And we talk about what it's missing. It doesn't feel, there's no voice there. Right. And so I think having these conversations with students, and I try to be really open about it in my classroom, so it's more of a conversation, because I want to hear their perspective. It's like they have so many classes. Every teacher is asking them to do so much. Mm-hmm. They have outside of school a lot of commitments. And so I think generally they reach to it because they feel rushed, mm-hmm. because they feel like there isn't enough time in their day, because they don't have any flexibility. Teachers are saying you have to turn this in. It has to be done. And so they feel stuck, I think. And I think that's the main reason they use it.
Right.
a writer, and I greatly value editors. And I think everyone needs an editor. How does an editor, or even just asking one other person to look at what you wrote, help you do better communication?
Yeah, well, you know, I think without question, like writers throughout history, historically, you're always sharing your writing and getting feedback on it. And so the main way, if you're specifically asking about communication, is, and something we teach in our classes with peer review, which is a huge part of classes, that's what you'd call it in a composition class. But in a creative writing class, you call it workshop, usually, right? So you share your writing, and then you get feedback on it. So how to incorporate feedback, not take the feedback personally, you know, to improve rewriting. And you do that in life too, right? How do you improve your life from feedback from other people, your partner, your boss, or your colleagues, or whatever? And so the editor, the word editor, you know, implies a certain relationship in a way, like a hierarchical one. It's somewhat in a fiction world, I think, where you send it off to an editor and they make suggestions. But it is always up to the author, right, what the final thing is going to be. So I don't know. As poets, I think we think about it more as like you send it to a friend to get feedback and workshop on. If you're a fiction writer with a fancy contract, you probably do have an actual editor that you work with who's really like shaping the book for you to be publishable, right? But either way, the communication is the key to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think too, especially for our students, they think of editing, when you ask them to like peer edit or peer review, they think of it as like, let's just go through and find where the commas are missing. You know, they think of it on a very like grammatical sentence level way. And so really we have to kind of guide them through. This is a revision process. You're engaging with someone and their ideas and their the way that they're thinking about something and the way that they're languaging the way they're thinking. And so we really have to kind of open up that understanding of what editing is to help them understand it's a conversation between two people. And you're saying, this is what I'm understanding you say. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe how you could make it clear, you know, this is maybe where you could develop it, or maybe it's too developed and you need to press it down a little bit. So I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, they think of editing as just like, where's the, you know, what is the misspelled word? Where's mm-hmm. the missing period? So we try to expand that a little bit.
Well, and certainly people can become better writers by attending classes where they would hear feedback and going to the free Clark College Writing Workshop on Saturday, March 19th. So, like, I'd like to ask you then a question, which is that many fantastic works of fiction are great because they are using some great writing conventions. Mm. What is an example of a book that you really love and you could say to somebody, this book is great and it's using some writing conventions that are admirable?
Well, in the Native Lit class I mentioned earlier, I got to teach Ceremony by Leslie Marmon Silko. I don't know if you all know that book, but it came out in the 70s, and I mean, to me, it's so funny that term great American novel, you know, when people say that, they all just think of like novels written by old white men and
Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah. And in my mind, like really all the great American novels have been written by people of color, you know, in this country, because it captures our country in a much more intimate and realistic way. And I think Leslie Marmon Silko's Ceremony is like, there's no better novel that's been written in the U.S., in my opinion. And it's just incredible. So I recommend that book for everyone. And the characters and settings are all amazing. And the conventions are actually, the structural conventions are unusual in that book. And that's one thing that makes it so interesting. The way the narrative's portrayed and the way time is used and the way the characters move through the world is much more reflective of indigenous wisdom than our Western way of thinking. That's the one that came to mind when you asked me that question.
What about you, Jen?
Oh, it's so tough, even on the way here thinking about that. And it's so hard to just think of one example. I just think in poetry, one of the things I'm really drawn to is repetition and what, as a, you know, if you're thinking about a poetic convention, what repetition can do, how it can be used. So one of my favorite writers is a poet named Larry Levis, and I think he employs that convention really skillfully and beautifully, where when you come back around to, you know, the same line or the same concept, and that repetition kind of threads through his work, it feels new each time, but yet it also feels like part of this lineage or something longer. So that would be my answer.
I'll just add to that. Usually when I answer a question like, who's your favorite writer, or what's mm-hmm. your favorite book, it's often just the book I'm reading at that moment.
That's what I always say.
It's the one just read last week.
Yeah, it's true.
So I'm curious now, what are you reading at the moment?
Yeah.
Well, actually, our poet friends in Portland just invited us into an Ursula Le Guin book club.
Oh, fun.
So we've been reading some Ursula Le Guin for the first time, which has been cool. It's hard to read outside of when we're during the term. It's actually mm-hmm. really hard to read anything other than what we're teaching. But as I mentioned earlier, right now I'm immersed in So Far From God by Ana Castillo and discovering mm-hmm. her work. She's incredible. What are you reading, darling?
Yeah, I feel like we've been reading the Le Guin books, and we're not really steeped in sci-fi, so this is like a new terrain for us. So
niche
learning
genre.
Yeah, learning how to, like, you know, experience a sci-fi book has been great. But yeah, that's mostly what I've been reading. I feel like,
actually, you've been reading Christopher Tuton's book too, who's come into Clark.
Yeah.
A wonderful author coming from up near Seattle, who teaches up there, indigenous scholar and author, and he's coming to the workshop on Saturday.
Good to know.
Yeah.
It's going to be a wonderful asset of the KXRW Book Fair, because there are going to be authors just all around, you know, all sorts of tables, and often authors selling their own works, which is a really hard thing. And we just have a little over a minute, but is there any little piece that you would say about how to find a publisher in 1 minute, or how to?
As poets, I feel like we don't dabble in that world.
Well, it's very genre based is another way to say it.
Yeah.
You know, so it really depends on what you want to write. If mm-hmm. you want to make writing like part of your life professionally and try to get published, it's really genre based. So if you write poems, like, it's a whole different thing than if you're trying to get a fiction contract, you know? So I just think research, like anything. One thing I always tell my students, and I always do, is see that if you like a book, see the press that wrote it.
Yeah.
And get in contact with the press and ask them how the book came to be. And the press will always get back to you.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a fabulous strategy. Mm-hmm. Well, that's our show. As we said in the beginning, we are in awe of what you do every day. Thank you, Jesse Morse and Jen Denro. I'm Tracy Riley Kelly with Teresa Torres, Rachel Bancroft, and this is Citizen 411. We'd like everyone represented and empowered. Citizen 411 is powered by the League of Women Voters of Clark County, and it's produced at KXRW. Remember that KXRW is having a fun drive right now. Why don't you go online, check out the station, KXRW.org, and then look up 99.9 on the radio. And if you like what you hear, find our show.